Welcome to the Movement Podcast. This show is all about movement. We tackle it from different angles, bring on guests, answer questions, go on a few tangents, and give practical advice, giving you guys a better idea of how you can optimize the human body to be the best it can be. Let's preview what's coming up in this episode.
Don't slouch, sit up straight, keep your head up. Familiar sayings that all deal with the same thing, posture. On this episode, the guys discuss the importance of posture in our overall health, reasons for bad posture, how we measure it, along with finding ways to correct it. For our final segment, we bring back a good friend of the podcast, Brian Nguyen, who deepens the conversation on posture with Gray and Lee, including the power of how you can carry yourself. So let's get straight to it with this episode of the Movement Podcast, powered by FMS.
Really excited today, Gray. We're going to be talking about posture. And I noticed you dressed up for this episode. You got your sleeves on. You got your quite a bit of gray cover today, which is always good for me. And just wish you would cover those feet up. That's just the last little piece that...
If it will please you, I am uncomfortable. It's better.
Then knowing that is the cherry on top.
I'm not sure how good I'll do today. No, all the tank tops just weren't in my path this morning. So walking out of the house, knowing I had to have at least some clothes on, I did this thinking you might like it.
At least some clothes on.
Yeah, you know, so the loincloth and the spear.
We do not need to have that visual around the house. Gray's gray. He's all out.
I'm just a bear scratching my back on a tree, wondering what everybody's asking me questions for. It's just you know, comfortable.
Is that all you're scratching on your back?
Yeah, just got to dress for comfort when you're older, man.
I'm sure you got all the itches.
Yeah.
You know, so many people right now want to have or find a solution to, quote unquote, fix their posture. And it's really a fair question because there's so many people that are having some issues. We're sitting too much. I mean, if you go online, you start looking at different ways to fix your posture. The standing desk will come up. Exercises will come up. So it is a fair question, but it's not necessarily an easy solution. And I think the assumption, Gray, is that posture is all about how you stand and how you sit and what you look like. It's like stand up straight or sit up straight, and that's posture. But it takes a lot of different forms. Really, your posture is about, you know, being, I'll use the word good PhD word, be good in every position that you're in.
That's a fair assumption. And just for the listeners out there that may not have the anatomy background or things like that, posture, if you're going to change it, is really going to be a muscular issue, okay? And there's two types of muscles in your body. They're the prime movers. These are the big engines, okay? Your glutes, your pecs, your quads. These are the muscles.
These are the ones people train.
Yeah, this is what the bodybuilders are showing off when they get their oil out, right? Yep. But if you can see this on the internet, primal pictures, you can strip off that superficial layer of big muscles, and what you'll see is a skeleton with a bunch of little muscles on it.
The rotator cuff. Most people know what the rotator cuff.
The abdominals, some of the inner thigh muscles, the muscles around the pelvis, the ones holding the spine together, these are your postural stabilizers. They're called slow twitch muscles because they run all day like a sewing machine or a diesel in the background doing things. But believe it or not, they're the first on the job. So when you grab an apple...
A sewing machine runs all day?
Well, I guess if you're in a factory, it does, right?
Okay.
So what I'm saying is if you grab an apple or a bowling ball, your rotator cuff is on first, and then you bring your pec, your deltoid, your lat, and your trap in to help say, oh, this is an apple. If I lift it like a bowling ball, I'm going to smack it in my forehead. So the first muscles on every job are the stabilizers, and they're the last muscles off the job. Now, when you need to be in a good position, I think a great little definition I've been using for posture in the background of all the crazy thoughts I have is posture is balanced stillness, meaning anybody can be still, but are you balanced? Can you relax, breathe, and have a conversation there? So stacking your skeleton in a way where your muscles don't have to work hard, but they do have a certain amount of sway control is really what we see when we see people with posture. And so many athletes who are working on a movement pattern don't understand that the way my mind sees movement is a posture is your starting position, and your ending position and your pattern is everything in between. So if we took a lunge, it starts standing and it ends half kneeling, and everything in between is a lunge. So you got two shapes and one blur. And what we realized a long time ago with the movement screen is if you can't throw down this shape, you probably ain't gonna have a good pattern. And so even though the movement screen is seven different movements, really we're looking for a signature shape of you. And if you can't cover that shape, I had this really cool conversation with Kelly Starrett talking about that. We know you're not going to have a good pattern just because your starting and ending shape aren't good. So we don't have to overanalyze what's going on in between. You started wrong and you ended worse.
But your shape's going to be different depending on what you're trying to accomplish.
Of course, but there should always be balanced stillness before you start a move and when you get your landing. And it's the lack of that balanced stillness that makes us compensate, recover poorly, land wrong, round our back and stuff like that. And so getting back to that postural awareness is literally studying those shapes. If half kneeling smokes you, that's a shape you need
so
to learn
do
to
you,
cover.
What do you do? I mean, if we're talking to, you know, your mom and she has quote unquote poor posture. I mean, she doesn't care about the shapes. She's just trying to get better posture.
Number one, if I were doing it with my mom, the screen would let me know if my mom has lazy posture, meaning she has movements she's not using, or she can't even get into those positions. So the very first thing—
Hold on. That's important. I think that's very important for people to understand, because most people assume someone in poor posture, their head's forward, they have rounded shoulders, the kind of the typical thing that if you Google poor posture, that's what you're going to see. Well, there's two things there that you just said. One could be they do have some tightness and you do have to work through it. One could be they've got some weakness and right. You've got to make it a little bit stronger.
And before both of those things, there's an awareness problem. So number one, let's make sure you and I both agree you do have a posture problem and you do want to change it. Okay. I think you can't even get into the shape.
But how do you even do that? How do you even make sure to get somebody aware?
Screen and assess, but I don't tell them what's wrong. Usually if I find somebody who has very poor upper back range of motion, I'll stand them on their feet and look at their rotation. Can you see behind you? No, they cannot. And then we will do a corrective.
And one of the bigger things that I've seen, Gray, over the years, when we ask someone to do that, stand on one foot or turn and rotate, what makes them aware is the fact of how good one side is compared to the other.
Exactly. And so do we say one side is Superman and one side is bad? Or do we say, I think your better side is normal and your worst side could use some work? And that's where the conversation ends for most people. Unless, you know, I'm lecturing to a bunch of medical professionals, it ends there. Yeah, you're right. I can balance on my right foot and not my left. What are we going to do with my left? Well, funny you should ask. We do these four things, and we will retest them on a baseline.
Because somebody could have a lack of foot or ankle stability, which puts them in poor posture.
Exactly. And finding out if there's a big problem. I mean, if there's a rock in your shoe, I'd like to get it out. And so if there's some of these obvious things we can do to make that first experience a little bit better, usually we gain some trust and just enough traction to keep the relationship going, because they became a little more self-aware than they were. And that alone is probably the best corrective.
And that's how they can continue to provide their own feedback. I mean, if you just tell someone, stand on your right foot, how does that feel? Stand on your left foot, how does that feel? And they know their left foot is worse, then they don't need to come and get a full-blown Gray Cook assessment every day. They can just stand on their left foot. Yep. Is that better today or not?
And that's our low end example. Let me give you a little bit of an athletic example. I've loved paddleboarding for a while,
and I know you tell us.
And I've watched the way people at resorts teach paddleboarding. Never been on a paddleboard before. Me and my four kids want to go paddleboarding. Everybody starts standing. That's not how you started walking. You started walking crawling. So one of the things that I've done, and I've helped a lot of people, is we lay down on the board just like a surfer, put the paddle under our chest, and just we learn to move the board laying flat. And then we come up to kneeling and half kneeling, and I start working on your paddle stroke. It's about moving the board forward, because if you start people standing, they get into a very defensive, very inefficient posture, breathing pattern, and on top of that, they try to create a paddle stroke. And so what I'm saying is forward propulsion is the number one thing I need to teach you on a board for safety. What if you get in harm's way? I can still move the board. So paddle the board with your hands, come up to kneeling, paddle it tall kneeling. All right, that's both knees down, half kneeling, 1 foot up, one knee down, both sides. You're going to see a huge difference there. But by the time you stand up, you'll look like you've been doing it for a week, and that was only 15 minutes ago. Whereas if I start you standing and you're trying to force that board to be stable like a boat dock so you can just get to your lats and start pulling hard, you're going to pull yourself right off the board every time. So it's been one of my best postural education, even for people who aren't into paddleboarding. And I've done it with some golfers and I've done it with some athletes. And by the time they get standing, since we took them out of the element where they were trying, like golf or football or whatever, we took them out of the element, gave them permission to fall in the water and play around in a safe environment. I've trained more people on postural awareness by taking them out of their comfort zone, getting them out of the gym. Let's get out on the board. Bring that back to the gym now. When you're doing an overhead press, are you standing on a board or are you hunched over checking out the mirror? You know, and they got it. So
yeah, I take it even one step further. Even for me, early on, we started playing around with some of the rolling, literally not foam rolling, but rolling on the ground, and taking someone who had poor posture, poor balance, poor single leg stance, taking them to the ground, having them roll to the right, roll to the left a few times, handful of times, and then get back up, and their single leg stance immediately gets better. Now, I would argue that getting up and down off the floor maybe it helped just as much as the rolling did, but something as simple as that, that awareness, going back down, and what you're talking about is that natural way of learning to move, take your center of gravity down on the ground, get comfortable on the ground, learn how to stand. Again, that's a postural awareness thing that most people don't get.
Then the one trick that I think has been prevalent to me in FMS, both you and I doing it, but watching some of our favorite instructors and colleagues, peers, and partners doing it, is FMS is a movement screen that really makes one decision. If you're in a bad posture, we go down a level. So if we see standing problems in function, that is not where we're working with you. We're working with you in kneeling or sitting. Your spine's vertical, but we took your feet and legs out of it, so we're going to compartmentalize that. If you don't even look good kneeling, we're going to wind up in quadruped, and if you struggle in quadruped, we're going to wind up flat on your back, on your side, or on your stomach. So we always go down a posture and still do the movement, and then come back up into the posture that you need to go. Most people stay at the posture of the mistake and overcoach the pattern. And we realize when babies have difficulty, they drop a posture and keep moving forward.
Well, you've got to come to a point where the person is successful. And if you're sitting there overcoaching a standing posture, stand up straight, stand up straight, stand up straight, take your chin back and all that, they have zero idea what you're asking them to do, and they're getting anxiety, their breathing's all screwed up. Take them down a level and then try the same thing. Chances are they're going to get a little bit better. If that is not better, take them down a posture.
A tree without roots doesn't do well in adverse condition, and your physical roots are those developmental postures. And so if you can't do something in one of the postures below standing, it means something very significant in standing. And so just be able to do that. And if you can't, there are a lot of good people that can help you with it.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go a little bit deeper.
FMS2 is designed for FMS certified professionals who want to take their FMS1 knowledge to another level. FMS2 builds on how to take movement screen results and develop exercise programming to positively influence movement health, competency, and performance. In FMS2, you will learn essential strategies to correct movement dysfunctions in your clients, athletes, and patients. This interactive course focuses on a variety of exercises based on the fundamentals of mobility and motor control that are specifically designed for sustainable movement health. The learning environment is reinforced with detailed case studies for practical application in a variety of training scenarios. Are you ready to directly impact how well your clients move? Take a look at our upcoming courses and get started today.
So we're talking about posture, and really, most of what people think about is when you're standing up and you're at your desk. But again, that needs to carry over into everyday activities, whether it's exercise or even going out and playing a sport or playing tennis or golf or whatever. And we mentioned something, the postural grid, that's actually not a bad tool in a lot of ways. You mentioned that you saw it back in the late 1990s, stand in front of the grid and see what's going on with a person. But how does that apply, or how does that carry over into when you start looking at movement and higher levels of type of activity?
I think the postural grid historically has been a great perspective. It's to see a person standing with some vertical and horizontal reference. However, what happened was it's a slippery slope. People see a person standing, they have that grid in their head and they know a little bit about anatomy. Like, ooh, that looks like a tight rhomboid. Ooh, that looks like a tight lat. You know, and then the wheels fall off the cart. If I were most people trying to look at posture, and I have been, you take the snapshot of what's going on the grid, but you don't take action on what you see on the grid because it's a slippery slope and it's a whole lot of assumptions there. What we have done over time between stuff like the Y balance test, a smaller version of that called the motor control screen, and one of our actually loaded carry tests that look a lot like movement. Two tests look very much like balance and one looks like a farmer's carry, right? And yet these movement tests tell us more about your posture than the grid did, but it doesn't mean the grid's obsolete. I want to pre and post on the grid, but we're not going to tell you when you're on the grid to pull this shoulder back and put your chin back. We're going to go load you either through your limbs in a balance test or through an external load in a carry, and we're going to basically measure how far you can reach or how far you can walk. And if you can't make it the average distance for your age and gender, we're going to say you have a posture problem, not a strength problem. And by training you in the ways that we would do to get your posture up, not only will you look better on the grid, you're going to come out stronger in the long run.
But think about this, Greg. What happens when you load someone, when mm-hmm. you give someone the weight in the carry test you're describing, you're giving someone a significant amount of weight and you're asking them to walk? What's going to be the first thing that fails them in that situation?
Their grip's usually going to give out, and they're going to say, well, I could have gone longer if my grip hadn't given out. But if we know what happens 30 steps before they look at it and say, my grip gave out, they round their shoulders, they throw out that chin, they start breathing
their
heavy.
Their posture gives out.
They dump their posture. And what Phil Plisky, one of the researchers helping us develop our FCS test, our fundamental capacity screen test, realized is you don't even have to analyze the way they're carrying. If they dump posture, they barely got 20 steps left in them. So if they can't make the average go of a loaded carry, and the criteria for that is 75% of your body weight divided into each hand. Let's make it easy for the listeners. If you weigh 100 pounds, you're going to have about a 35-pound kettlebell, 40-pound kettlebell in each hand. If you can't walk 90 seconds with that, you probably have some postural work that'll make a bigger difference than any other work you could do, barring you don't have pain or something like that. You basically, your strength and endurance and power go up by getting a more racked up skeleton.
So what you're saying though, Gray, is really keep an alignment. So when you put that weight, that's a significant amount of weight. You put that weight in each hand.
We don't even recommend training with that unless that's your sport. We simply use that extra weight to make you dump. When we actually train your posture and your carries, we're using very
light weight. Right. But when you're trying to find the mistake. You're trying to figure
magnify
out where
the error.
Magnify the problem. But what you're really describing is someone's inability to maintain alignment. So when you have your body lined up, you're pretty damn solid.
And see, that's the thing about it. The minute we verbalize the alignment problem, we make it a conscious issue. Whereas a PGA professional playing golf for 3 days has the same posture on the third day they do on the first. They have postural endurance, but they're not even aware of it. It's running subconscious. And that's what allows athletes and the Cirque du Soleil people and dancers to do what they do. They don't even think about posture anymore. It is so ingrained into everything they do that it's an automatic response. And where we're walking beside somebody doing a carry saying, hold your shoulders back. If they don't know their shoulders are forward, let them fail.
Well, what's the first thing you see? Some of the athletes we worked at the highest levels, you ask them to pick up a pretty heavy weight. The first thing they do is shrug their shoulders. And they're using, I think you said it before, prime movers to do what the postural muscles should be doing.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to give you a historical perspective and then an aha moment. When we started in kettlebells, we were looking at the Turkish getup, realizing most people were seeing it as a lift, not a carry. A Turkish getup, if you look at it, the weight's already up, you stand up under it. It's a carry. It's just vertical instead of horizontal. What you said is you hand somebody weight, they shrug. That's because in the United States, we haven't been taught to carry. We've been taught to lift. But anything worth lifting is probably worth carrying. Historically speaking, we carry our children, we carry our tools, we carry our weapons, we carry our food. Everything else, it's going to be there when we get there. But we got to carry the most important things. And so we called a carry test postural integrity under load. And when you can do that automatically at a average or better than average thing, I simply don't worry about your posture anymore. I worry about your next thing, your power or your symmetry or your skill or your state of readiness, but I don't worry about your posture anymore. And if you can't cover that mark, I do worry about your posture. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the whole mentality of what we're trying to get people to understand, whether we're talking about posture or power or balance or whatever it is. It's trying to eliminate the things you're worried about. And I think that's counterintuitive in the fitness and strength conditioning world. You're always thinking more, more, more. Well, really what we're trying to do is figure out, okay, I don't worry about these things. You're good enough.
And let me throw one other thing out. Whenever we see
people. What was that aha moment in there? I didn't hear that one.
You didn't hear that?
Oh.
I'm getting ready to help you with it.
Okay.
So we see somebody who may test weak. And a lot of people who see, well, you got a weak bicep, they're testing your bicep, they automatically assume weakness. I don't. I assume inhibition. And the same thing can occur with posture. And we had a pro athlete, unbelievably explosive athlete in the NFL, had an ACL reconstruction, was coming back. And when we did his movement screen and the FCS test, the one thing that we didn't expect was his carry test would be so low. He barely covered 40 seconds with his appropriate body weight carry. Obviously, he's here for treatment. We brought him upstairs. We did some stuff, gave him a lunch break, came back down, and did that carry test again. Now, that's about a 25-foot figure eight walking around cones, so both your turns are opposite, you know, of each other. And he was doing 75% of his body weight. He bested his previous effort by almost 40, 45 seconds. And when we asked him about his perceived exertion, how do you think you did this time? That's about the same. I have the same level of tiredness. He had no idea he doubled his carry. It was that comfortable. Now, we didn't train his muscles or make them stronger in that single day. And he didn't eat anything for lunch that gave him that. Basically, he had a hip flexor that was holding everything together. We did a little bit of work. We got his posture in kneeling better. We got his posture in standing better. And he didn't realize at the same fatigue level, he doubled his work capacity in the same day. So the one thing I want to tell clinicians out there is many times the appropriate posture is inhibited by something. And we know that movement can be inhibited by you avoiding certain things due to malalignment or not enough range of motion. But that was the living, breathing example of something I always had a theory of, and it proved itself that same day. So
during the FCS, when you're doing that heavy carry, what's the most common thing you see that fatigues?
Well, everybody always says my grip gave out. And I'm glad you asked that, because they don't understand your grip doesn't give out because it's weak. Your grip gives out because it's a safety valve. If you can no longer carry something with integrity, your subconscious mind will often override your conscious grip and say, all right, we're either going to rip your shoulder out or you're going to let go of that dumbass. And then dumbass lets go of it and then says, my grip gave out. No, it didn't. You gave out and your grip let go.
Yeah, I hope to get to an FCS sometime soon myself. As a lifter, we were talking about, you know, we're trained to lift and not necessarily pull. And so I'm interested to see kind of what my assessment ends up being. You talked about dancers and their posture. Back in the 90s, it was really popular. You'd kind of see maybe the football player in a dance class or, you know, some athletic kid being put into a dance class, maybe against his will. Is it because of the posture that was kind of a popular thing?
It is. You see yoga, dance, and martial arts used by some of the best athletes in the world, especially when they start to age, because they realize, I'm not getting any more out of the squat rack, right? I'm over that. And so the Chicago Bulls, when they were in the Michael Jordan heyday, they were an old team compared to the teams they were playing. And one of the things Phil Jackson did is he had those guys doing yoga 2 days a week. And I don't know, it was the, just the group camaraderie, aches and pains, breathing, whatever, but they were doing it. Arnold was doing some of those things for his posing. We've seen a lot of the receivers in the NFL complement dance or maybe even martial arts or a little bit of stuff for what they're doing. So I think it's a discipline that takes you so far away from the thing you're going to do that you're clay and you just let that thing mold you. And I don't think these guys become great dancers. I don't think they become yoga instructors, but it's just enough to get them back into their center. And that's what it's for. And Lee and I do that all the time. We don't, all right, cross training. It's supposed to be almost the opposite of what you do. So I've worked with a lot of hockey players and speed skaters. And they're like, well, what are you doing for cross training? Well, I get the slide board. I'm like, that's the same damn thing without ice. That's exactly the, so it's like a cyclist saying, yeah, I cross train. I go to spin class 2 days a week. That's not cross training. That's the same damn thing with a different windshield. So we love when we take an unbelievably strong, explosive person and make them slow down and have elegance, grace, and control and not pose it. They actually own it. And it takes about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So.
All right, we'll take a quick break. And when we return, we bring back a good friend of the podcast, Brian Nguyen, who deepens the conversation on posture with Gray and Lee, including the power of how you can carry yourself.
The FCS course is designed for professionals ready to break down barriers and catapult active individuals to achieve performance goals. The FCS gives pros the tool to accurately measure benchmarks essential to progress from functional movement to functional performance. FCS is a highly interactive certification course that explores the dynamics of how individuals control their body, display explosive power, utilize energy storing, and maintain integrity under heavy loads to best develop sustainable performers. FCS is a physical, fast-paced course that builds on your FMS1 screening. You'll perform FCS tests with your peers and engage in lecture and breakout sessions with your instructors. Are you ready to discover the key elements of performance testing to unlock an active individual's full potential? Take a look at our upcoming courses and get started today.
So Brian, I saw you did a presentation. I don't know. I saw it on YouTube and you were talking about posture and just how screwed up we are right now.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's something that I think all of us deal with. I mean, I get questions all the time from people. Hey, my neck's kind of messed up. What do I need to do?
Man, if you can't sell training, coaching by talking about posture, oh my goodness, you have not empowered yourself. All right. Because one of the biggest things that people are aware of is posture. They know that they all know they need to, you've heard it. They all know they need to drink, half their body weight in ounces or a lot of water, a lot more than they're drinking right now. They know they need to sleep 6 to 8 hours. And when I say they, that's the clients, right? Clients, if you do any version of an alignabod during your assessment, those things are gold.
All right, what is an alignabod?
What is an alignabod? So basically imagine a grid of 1-inch or 2-inch squares on a wall behind somebody. When they stand in front of that grid, you now are able to get a really great, amazing view at any kind of like just asymmetries, how the which shoulder's higher, which arm's carrying longer, you know, this foot is out tilt this way, the head's like this, you know, they look like they've been in a car wreck.
All right, let me stop you right there, because that was in vogue a long, long time ago. And that postural grid is one of the most old school informative things. Guess what happened when I was in my 20s? People were putting up the posture grid and they like—
You drank too much?
It happened right after that. No, people would put people up against that grid and say, your left shoulder's too high. It means you've got a tight upper trap. And I'm sitting here going, how do you know the right one's not too low? Mm. So I love what you just said there. You're simply taking a snapshot of imbalance, but you're not implicating one side over the other.
Because
there's no, I don't know which shoulder's high, which shoulder's low. I don't know which, why you're leaning
but
that
way. But
somebody
can look in the mirror and literally stand in front of the mirror and say, shit, that just doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do?
If you see it every day, though, it stops.
But what do they do?
Well, I mean, what do you mean? They're coming to us. If you're selling your systems right, we all know that a improper kinetic chain, if your kinetic checkpoints, what I mean by that is, you know, the head, the shoulder, the axis, if the axis is askewed,
tilted,
if you take a stack of books and you just start pushing them all over the place, it's like Jenga, right? At some point in time, things start falling off the edges and off the sides. That's our body, right? If we're sitting with our heads forward all the time, if all this stuff is like, you feel those things. And when you have someone with really, you know, weird, and so where do you feel tight? Where do you hurt? You know, we're just trying to get a great feeling, because as we work out, I want to make sure I'm prescribing the things that really help your posture and your carry. You know, the less we have that we're off-centered, the less chance we have of being injured.
Is there something, Brian, that someone, that you could say, you said prescribe an exercise.
Yeah.
And again, Gray and I both aren't in the, we're never just going to say, oh, this is the best exercise. But if posture is such a huge problem, how do we address it?
You must address the why. You can't just say, hey, you need this posture because, like, my real why has always been about empowering somebody else. I am going to be fire in someone's life. That's the whole thing. Dragon Master Bri is about the dragon will spew fire into the clouds so that it may rain down upon the dry land and feed the people. That's what I want to do. I just want to feed the people. When I talk about posture, I'm not talking about, oh, injure this, injure this. That's not what I'm saying. I want you to stand like this. And I show them that crappy posture. Get into your desk. Show me what that's like. Get into your car. And that's that what you watch on YouTube is we're spending our day. I wake up in the morning, roll out of bed.
All right, let me talk about two things.
Yeah.
Two things that will override every good posture inclination you have.
Yeah.
Your airway and your pain. And what we've seen is we've got this anterior head posture. It's the desk computer screen posture. But think for a minute. What if your airway is bigger when you're in bad posture than it is when you're in good posture? Because you've been bad posture so long, your tissues have actually morphed. We say stand up straight. They go, I don't have as much oxygen here. And we say stand up straight, and it's like, but it hurts my low back. So I was talking to my daughter, who's actually into postural screening wellness. We just talked about ways to screen posture, the grid, the movement screen, or information for posture. What's the posture survey sound like? And I heard myself for the first time articulate this from my daughter, who's just getting into the profession. I said, listen, when you're talking to somebody and they have movement pain, say, would you rather stand or sit for a half hour, an hour, or, you know, would you rather move? And when you find people that have more complaints about static positioning, I can't sit on a plane more than 2 hours. I can't stand in line more than 15 minutes without getting fidgety. And I see this when Lee and I go to movement conferences and look out, there's people that can't sit. Oh, they can fit all day, but they just can't sit for 30 minutes. That's a problem too. And so when we ask questions, does movement cause you more discomfort? Or does static positioning cause you more discomfort? That's the survey that sort of anoints the screen and lets me know, oh my gosh, they don't know how to control posture. But the first two things we take off the table are, how do they breathe and are you in pain? And 50% of the people that have those huge posture problems answer yes to one of those things.
Yeah.
They flunk a breathing screen, have airway problems, sleep apnea, don't breathe through the left nostril, it hurts to stand up. And so if you take those postural interrupts off the table, it's way better than fixing a movement pattern.
Yeah.
Because postures like sitting, standing, and lying that aren't comfortable are way more pervasive in your life than your walking lunch.
But what you're saying, Gray, it's a lot more complicated. At the end of the day, it's not one exercise you can prescribe to somebody. No, it's not one position.
And this is what this is.
You can't just simply say sit up straight.
You're exactly right. Those are the benefits that come along with it. The shift, the rock that I move for people is I'm not talking about their airway. I'm not talking about anything. I'm just talking about their sheer energy, their power. When you slouched over, how can you, no one feels powerful. You feel weak. You feel meager.
Nothing can flow.
You're hiding. This is chi, no chi. Okay? When you go and put your chest up and you puff out and you put your arms up, this is a posture of, I just won. There is not a kid that jumps huge and goes, they go, I did it. And so if you can remind your clients, what does this feel like to you when you do this? And then all of a sudden they catch that with you. They hear what you're saying. I feel better. I feel stronger. That's because this is the power. When you are here, you are present. You are powerful. I am here.
You know what you just said too?
Yeah.
As a child is growing, everything they want to be is above them. They want to be on the counter. They want to be in your arms. They want to be up there. And so they're constantly doing this. Most adults do way more down than up. And so when we're looking at stuff like you and I were doing windmills, we're doing get-ups, we're doing things that are making us go up.
Yes.
But you're not just pressing that bag or kettlebell up. I'm making you watch it too. And I remember coaching each other, and we're basically taking just as much intention.
You got to do like Seinfeld, baby. When you're a kid inside.
But part of what we're talking about here is the problem.
Yes.
What's the solution?
You have to remind people that they will tap into a greater sense of their power if you can get them back to where they're supposed to be, which is here. They were never meant to carry themselves like a meager, small child with a dunce cap in the corner. They were meant to roam this earth, a great mover with great presence and great power within. I promise you that. And there's not one soul out there that doesn't want that. That's what this human experience is about. It's about finding that sense of belonging, that sense of I can help somebody else and I can propagate my energetic love to carry that. And when you carry yourself with good posture and good confidence, other people want to listen. Other people want to be a part of that. And that's what you really hone into for your clients. How do you make the change? How do you take something and say, oh, well, how do you fix the problem, Lee? Well, you fix the problem by being part of the change. Be the change.
Yeah, and what we did with you, we were messing around with that right shoulder thing.
I don't want to lose that train of thought because we've been going back and forth on the whole Seinfeld thing. We even watched Jerry Seinfeld
Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
It's a great show. But one of his bits is, you know, when you're a child, everything is up. You know, hold up, wait up, slow up. You know, like, but when you're an adult, slow down. Put that down, you know, it's like, oh, down. It's true. You know, if you can get into that child mentality again and all it takes, we have these stickers, you know, posture up, power posture, whatever
priming.
Reminds you.
It's priming.
To put it on your computer.
Well, like, right. The one thing I'm hearing you say, the one thing I've heard both you guys say is one, the fix is very complex because you don't know what the underlying issue is. The first step is become more aware that you got a problem and take some actions to fix it. Now, what those actions are going to be different from a lot of people.
Well, and what we saw with you, your posture changed in about 6 minutes. You added almost 2 inches to your chest, but we didn't pump you up.
Two inches to your chest.
He was able to, that's pretty
when you're 5 foot nothing, 2 inches is a lot, all right? No. All right?
No, seriously.
I'm sure a lot of people like that advice. We added 2 inches to your chest.
The right shoulder was dead weight. We balanced him out. He basically changed.
Lee, would you like a little feel? Because I'm pretty sure.
That's not for today, bro.
To the outside person, his posture got better in a moment. We only expect patterns to get better, but you actually changed something. You felt it, but so you took dead weight off your posture. Your posture responded with a better presence, just like a pattern responds with less dysfunction. Two ends of the same situation.
Yes. My favorite postural exercises, by the way, are dead bug exercises.
Nice.
Specifically those using the Gray Cook band with a Palloff hold and a half foam roller under the knees.
Top exercise.
People are swerving in traffic, leaning in, trying to figure out, what's he saying now? Are we supposed to be listening to this?
That's like NPR.
Just do the dead bug.
Just
with the Gray Cook band.
With a cook
band. By the way, you can get the Gray Cook band at PerformBetter.com.
1-800-556-7464.
We'll send you a sleeveless.
I don't even know if it's the number. I feel like it is. I feel like I've got the catalog enough. I don't know.
So I think one of the great things we were just talking about posture, and we have obviously a lot of listeners who might be sitting at a desk right now or in their car, in traffic, whatever it may be, listening to this. And so they're thinking, all right, they're realizing they have some self-actualization going on that they are slumped over, you know, that steering wheel. So if they were to suddenly think, all right, if I were to try to stand up a little bit more upright and maybe, you know, go hands overhead and try to develop that power position, they might feel a little silly. So if you could put maybe some cue words or maybe a mantra or something to attach to that, do you have any suggestions there that maybe they can say to themselves to feel less silly?
Absolutely. The best advice I can give in that I used to always give my clients that were in that situation, you know, it's like, what am I doing? I said, first of all, you are being what you want to create. If you want to be 150 pounds, then eat like someone who weighs 150 pounds. If you want to stand like someone who's proud of themselves and their family, then stand like someone who's proud of himself or herself and your family. You don't deny that. Don't shy away from that. You don't got to make yourself smaller to make anybody feel smaller, and continue your path. And it is giving people permission to be the weirdo. In this, you realize we are less than 15% of the population moves around and exercises. That is a crap number. But if you want to be part of the 15%, that means that you are willing to be different. And you should not feel small or less than for being different. You should feel like you are part of the change. Empower yourself and, damn it, eat your broccoli.
All right, let me take what he said and give you two exercises. If you're a non-athlete and intimidated by posture, find a balance beam and get better at it. You can't balance and slouch as good as you can stand straight and balance. So a balance beam will make your posture better in 1 week, not by trying to outthink it, but just be on the beam. For an athlete, usually the beam is where I start, but most athletes, fast, explosive, and strong athletes that I see a posture problem in, I hand them a jump rope. Because you can slouch and run, but you can't slouch and jump rope. Mm-hmm. And why do you think fighters get to the jump rope? It's for the rhythmical, breathing, priming, postural, pistoning action that you can't get anywhere else. So balance beam, if you're intimidated by postural exercises, and jump rope, if you're good on the balance beam. And those two things that don't sound like posture demand better posture if they're going to become better.
What I heard was Gray say, be the beam.
Be
the beam, Danny.
Be the beam,
Danny.
Be the ball,
Danny.
You'll have nothing and like it.
And if you guys are in an office and you don't have a beam, just find an open space on your wall so that you can lean up against up against it. Your feet can be about 6 to 12 inches away from the wall so that you're kind of pushing yourself into that wall. And then, you know, just doing some of those arm raises to meet your posture, that's a great way to engage the body. But
Find something vertical and figure out you're not
5 to 10 reaches it takes 1 minute. Well, you have this reset, and that's a beautiful thing.
They make this little, it's about the size of a, I don't know, 2 or 3 inches long. Stick it on your back.
I've seen this.
And basically it hits you every, when you slash it, stand up straight.
Hey, and, I like it.
And I'll give Gray a little credit. I hate giving him credit in front of him. But Gray was working with some kids, and he put a little sandbag on top of their head and told them to walk and, jump off the thing and don't lose the sandbag. Well, the little sandbag would work exactly the same way. Stand at your desk, put a little sandbag, not a book, because a book will fall off, a little sandbag on top of your head is going to make you stand up straight. That's all the feedback you need. And I guarantee you, Perform Better will probably sell you one at performbetter.com.
And to finish this up, the reason Lee's posture is so good without the beanbag is when you look at that hair. I mean, outside of our president and a few hair bands, nobody can pull that off.
No. I wish I had 3 pounds of hair back behind my head.
Now that it's getting a little longer, it takes a little bit more,
three and a half pounds.
A little bit more stress.
An extra dime on the Pantene Pro V, please.
It's that biblical story of Samson.
It's costing me more money. You're exactly right. I'm now having to use a lot more shampoo, which is really irritating me. Because I had it down.
Yeah.
Hair and body wash.
All of a sudden I've got an extra $20 a month, $30 a month not having hair. It's great.
You can have a sleeveless shirt like Gray anytime you want. Getting hair like Lee is a commitment.
Yep.
Amen.
That'll do it for this episode of the Movement Podcast. Thanks for listening. And if you liked what you heard, please take a minute to subscribe, share, and review. If you want to learn more about our system and take the next step in your movement journey, visit us at movementpod.com. Until next time, remember to first move well, then move often.